love the recession resistance of mobile home parks. We love the limited supply. We love the demand for affordable housing. All the trends seem to play in favor of mobile home parks. It's the most economical housing option out there. And when times are tough, people need economical places to live.
Hey, freedom fighters. Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter standby. Did you hear that? That was the sound of my new Igloo home lock. This thing is awesome, guys, all right? If you've got a vacation rental that you need a lockbox for, or if you're a real estate agent and you need something for your listings that you can control from your phone, you guys need to check this product out. I love the app. I love the look. It's so sleek, and it even has a way for you to charge the device in case the batteries die on it. Guys, I'm telling you, this thing is great. And if you want 15% off, you can get it with the code ADPI. Go ahead and click the link in the show notes page to go and check out your new Igloo Home lockbox and get 15% off with the code ADPI, and you will be impressed. All right. I'm so excited to use this, guys, and I will catch you guys in the show. Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. We have an awesome, awesome guest again here today, Brian Murray. What's going on, sir? How you doing?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Excited to have you on the show, because for a lot of our guests who might not know the name Brian Murray in the real estate industry, let me do my best at giving you the intro that you deserve here. Started Washington Street Properties in 2007. Yeah, drum roll, Mike. Started out cutting your teeth in commercial real estate, have grown a massive portfolio, award-winning real estate guy. I don't want to just pigeonhole you into one thing, because you do everything in the commercial real estate. You do management, you do mixed use retail, you do apartments, you do apartment communities, you do mobile home parks. And now he is partnered with Brandon Turner and a whole team of excellent professionals running Open Door Capital, which is an excellent fund that is helping investors purchase mobile home parks and like massive mobile home parks. So Brian has been around, and we are glad to have him on the show, because this much experience, it's rare to find this much experience in one guy's head. You know, I hope to be there someday, but I'm glad to have you on the show, Brian. So welcome, welcome.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that intro. There's nowhere to go but down now, so.
Don't worry. I'll take you there.
Oh, man. Well, we hope not. But no, Brian, definitely, you know, echoing what Kevin said, it's an honor to have, you know, wisdom and experience, you know, and in our community, we try and surround ourselves with, you know, people who are not only like-minded, but experienced in the path, and you have walked the walk. So please, Brian, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in real estate. What was that spark to you that got you going?
Well, you know, back in 2006, I was actually teaching. I'd spent some time working in the corporate world and stepped off that track and started teaching. And I had kind of a rude awakening in terms of, you know, my income dropping, and I started to deplete my savings. And I said, you know, I need to do something to help me make ends meet and kind of reverse this money that I'm losing here. So I'd always been interested in real estate, started looking at properties. I started looking, just like most people do, to say, hey, maybe I could get a single family home or a duplex or a triplex. And, you know, I looked at a lot of properties, and I wasn't finding things that would get me the returns that I was hoping to get. And I gradually started to look at, bigger and bigger properties. And eventually I found an office building and, I had figured out that, hey, there's creative ways to finance things. And it turned out that this office building had a mortgage that could be assumed. And I was able to get into a pretty large property with very little money down, and spent the next couple of years turning that property around. It was highly distressed when I bought it. And I turned that property around. I picked up another property that I got owner financing on. Wasn't able to get mortgages back at that time. I wouldn't qualify. But I got those first two commercial properties. Both of them were about half full when I bought them, and I filled them up. And I finally got a bank to refinance. I took cash out refi, and I bought three more properties, including my first multifamily. And that was sort of the recipe that worked for me, and I kept following for the next decade, which was basically buy a distressed property, work my ass off turning it around and filling it up and making it better. Do a cash out refi and put all the money back into more properties. So I did that while teaching for about 7 or 8 years, and then I couldn't balance the two anymore. So I've been doing real estate full time ever since.
Outstanding.
So when you say teaching, what were you teaching? Was it business? Were you teaching at a university level, or what kind of teaching?
So I was teaching at a community college. Mm-hmm. So I was teaching business classes. I taught marketing classes and entrepreneurship classes. And actually was at the time I stepped down, I was actually working as the business department chair at a community college. But it was, you know, when I first started out there, you know, it was a pretty modest salary. I was making in the mid-30s, which was a huge drop in my income from when I had been in the corporate world. And I still had a lot of debts. I was having a lot of trouble kind of getting by at that time. Mm-hmm. And that's what motivated me to jump into real estate. Although, ironically, once I was in the real estate, working so hard at it, I just realized that it would be really detrimental to my real estate business to pull cash out. So I became really religious about reinvesting anything that I could pull back into properties, and I knew it would pay off later, and it did. So. All that worry about trying to help me make a little extra income, and I stayed cash poor for a really long time. So
yeah,
I hear you on that.
What do you know? What do you know about reinvesting into a company?
Oh yeah, reinvesting in the company, property, house rich, cash poor. Oh Lord, I just bought a property out here in Hawaii, Brian. I'm feeling it right now, and I got to get on that. But what I love there in your story, you know, in your intro, is that you weren't afraid to take those risks, right? You weren't afraid to test the waters in a few different ways. You know, you went from, you know, buying some smaller homes to you even tried buying an office, right? Finding some creative ways to, you know, to finance real estate. And then you took the plunge into buying, you know, more multifamily, but you had that end goal in mind, right? That was always the big picture. And even though it took you a little bit to find your specific path and your niche, you still found it. Right. And because you were still in the space. And I love that. I think that's super valuable. And I want to highlight that, because in a lot of the freedom calls that I do with all of our folks, is that there's so much information out there. Mm-hmm. How do you find what specific path you want to go? And I always tell them, I mean, the first thing is you want to limit where you're getting your information, right? You always want to try and fine tune that where you start, or that where you get your education from. But then from there, try something. Don't be afraid to fail. If you try it and you don't succeed, then okay, try it again. And maybe you did something wrong. Learn from your mistakes. If you tried it, you were successful, but you didn't like it, try something else, right? You will never know. And even if it takes you 5 years or 10 years to find what it is you want to do in real estate, but you know that real estate is for you, keep doing it, right?
Try
keep
it.
Making it happen. Try it until you find something, and then it switches the light bulb, and now you know that's it. But your journey doesn't have to be 1 year, and now you're all of a sudden crushing it in real estate and you're flipping millions of dollars in deals every single year. No, that's someone else's journey. That's not yours.
But they do it on HGTV, Mike. It only takes 30 minutes to flip a house. You know that, right?
Right. I just don't understand why people don't understand that.
I don't get that.
The gospel truth, right? yeah, man, I love that.
Yeah, Brian. You guys are absolutely right. I mean, it's so easy for people to get overwhelmed. And you know, a lot of people, they have this idea that real estate investing could be a great opportunity. But then once they start to look at it, the options are so broad, it can be overwhelming. But what you said is 100% correct. Like, you have to take a step and do something. You have to take action. And so you need to, even if you're uncertain, you know, pick a path and run with it. You can always change later, you know, but you've got to take that first step. And that's the hardest thing for people to do. And that's what really, you know, it was hard for me to take that first step. I had a lot of people try to talk me out of it. They thought I was crazy. They thought I was going to lose my life savings. And I might have, but at that point in my life, I was willing to take that risk. And I said, you know, I don't like the direction things are headed. You know, I have big dreams, I have goals, and I've got to take that risk and get started. And if I fail, I'll figure out a way to do it again. So, great advice.
Yeah. And I love how in the beginning, so when you decided on retail, you know, a lot of people run into the same issue. They're like, well, I can't afford a commercial property. But you went the creative way with an assumable mortgage on your first deal and with owner financing on your second deal. You didn't have to go to the bank. You didn't have to go and get qualified. You didn't have to have liquidity and net worth and all those things that, you know, operators out there today, you know, who are going to get Fannie and Freddie financing need, you know. You went and took the distressed property. You solved someone's problem, which is every time, you know, Mike or I or have a call or we're in the Action Takers Only Mastermind and people are coming at us with that same question that Mike brought up. It's, I would add to that, do something that solves someone else's problem. And guess what? If you like solving that problem, so it's fun for you to solve and it's taking a burden off of someone else, that is how you know that you're in your niche right there. But that's what you did. And then when it kind of snowballed for you there, when you had those two properties, then you went to a bank and said, hey, I actually know what I'm doing here. And the bank's like, oh, they put, you know, that same bank that may have like poo-pooed you away with like, oh, Mr. Murray, how can we help you today? You know, oh, we can refi, you know, two commercial properties for you. That would be wonderful, you know, but it's crappy how the world works like that, but you made it happen. And now you're, you know, sitting at the top.
That's it. So Brian, can you explain this to us, or maybe our folks that are just now hearing this and don't necessarily know what the assumable mortgage is? Just maybe walk us through brief what that process looks like.
Yeah. So one of the things I always recommend to people that are, you know, early in the process of negotiation, when you're learning about the seller, you're learning about the property, try to get any insights that you can about the seller's debt. And understand their situation. What is their motivation for selling? And what is their situation with, you know, do they have a mortgage on the property? How much do they owe? You know, some sellers are reluctant to disclose that information, but others understand that, hey, you know, what you're trying to do is come up with an offer and a solution that would work for everyone. If you have a good broker, they can help you to navigate that. But any information you can get about their debt opens up the different options for you to explore in terms of what you might be able to do creatively to buy that property. So one of the big ones is to assume that mortgage. So if the seller does owe money on that property, some mortgages are assumable and some are not. So if you can find out or maybe get a copy of their note and check for yourself and see, is there a provision in there for someone else to assume the mortgage? And very commonly in commercial mortgages, they are assumable. Not all of them are, but many of them are. Then you look at, hey, what are the terms? How much do they owe? And in many cases, you might be able to get into a property with less money than you would if you borrowed with got new debt. So, you know, in this situation, you know, I was able to assume a mortgage that covered more than 90% of the purchase price. And I had to go through that. It was a lengthy, rigorous process to try to go through the assumption. And I did have to spend money not knowing whether it was going to be approved. But in the end, I was able to get it approved and take over that mortgage. And so I had to pay the difference in cash, but I was now responsible for the remaining debt on that mortgage. So I, when you assume it, you just take that over. The other option that I've used is what I did on my second property, which is a, depending on how much the seller owes, you can borrow money from the seller. And they call that owner financing or seller financing. And they, in effect, become the bank. So on that second property, they actually didn't have any debt on it. And so they lent me a very significant portion of the purchase price. It was, again, it was close to 90%. And I borrowed that directly from the seller. I haven't actually had very many instances where I borrowed that much from the seller since then. It does happen, but what happens a lot more often is I will get a seller to lend me 5, 10, 15, 20, maybe 25% of the purchase price. And I will combine that with bank financing. I'll get a mortgage from a local bank and maybe they'll lend me 75%. And then I'll borrow 10% or 15% from the seller on top of that. And then again, I have a lot less cash to come up with to close the deal.
Nice. So, that's awesome. I love that. I love meshing these strategies together.
Yeah. So I've used those dozens of times. And I've encountered so many people who claim, oh, you can't do that. There's not sellers won't do that. You can't get deals that way. And they still tell me that. And I've got a property under contract right now that's all seller financing. I'm not using a bank. So, you know, people who claim that you can't do that, you know, the property I have under contract right now, it's in the Asheville, North Carolina market. It's a
great market. 20
multifamily. You can find those deals. It's just not easy. You have to look at a lot of deals to find them. It's not easy. So, the deals are out there. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah. No, I love that. Those strategies are awesome. And you know, for those of the people who are listening, who don't really, you know, kind of understand what Brian's saying, you know, he's able to go and combine bank financing, which typically, you know, 75%, they'll loan you 75%. So you got to come up with 25% of the purchase price, down payment, right? But then he goes and combines seller financing, which I presume is a second position lien because the bank's going to want to be number one, which is fine. You negotiate that with the seller. And then they come up with maybe not all of it, but some of it. And then your liability that you have to come up with to close this deal is way, way low. And if you're doing stuff like this, it's really easy to raise private capital. So if you combine a seller financing with traditional bank financing with raising private capital, you're golden. I mean, you're golden. Then you could focus on actually, you know, doing asset management and turning the thing around like you do. And there's some things I want to ask you, Brian, you know, because you mentioned retail and your first couple of deals were retail. Now, everyone who's been keeping an eye on COVID-19 obviously knows that retail has taken a tremendous dump, and that's putting it lightly. But what are you doing in your business to try to mitigate yourself or shield yourself from what's going on? Like, have you had tenants come up on the net and say like, hey, my store closed and I can't pay you? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So, you know, it's been quite interesting. You know, we have properties kind of across the spectrum. I still have both office and retail properties in my portfolio. The vast majority of it at this point is multifamily. Multifamily has held up quite well, actually, better than I think most people expected. Actually, our office tenants have done quite well. I think most office operations have moved to work from home, but the businesses have kept going. So, you know, I have a fairly large office building that we actually had 100% rent collection both of the last 2 months. And
wow.
There's about 30 office tenants in there. So, performing very, very well. I think longer term, I'm probably a little more concerned about the office sector because I think that companies are going to figure out that we didn't think we could operate with everyone working from home.
Exactly.
Might be able to save some money here going forward.
Hey, so let's renegotiate those terms, Mr. Landlord.
So I think that in the broader market, you're going to see a decline in demand for office space over the coming years because of that. Companies got kind of shoved along that path of figuring out how to do things remotely and leverage technology. And now I think that a lot of them are not going to go all the way back to what it was before. Retail has been absolutely hammered, depending on the retail. So I've got one plaza that, for example, has a Family Dollar and a bank, and those types of businesses are actually thriving. I mean, I think that I would venture to guess the Family Dollar probably has done their best business in a long time. Mm-hmm. But then when we do have other tenants in some of our properties that are the smaller, locally owned entrepreneurs who have been shut down, and some of them will not survive this. And that's very sad and unfortunate. The tenants who are trying to work their way through that had got completely shut down, can't pay their bills. We're working with them to say, hey, let's come up with a plan where maybe you pay, 1/12 of the rent each month next year when you're back up and operational or something like that. So mm-hmm. We let those tenants apply their security deposits to last month's rent to help them meet, their rent obligations. And those are some of the types of things we're doing to help them through. But unfortunately, all across the country, there's a lot of small businesses, entrepreneurs who are living, nearly paycheck to paycheck and can't survive this. Some of them are getting government assistance to help them through. The ones that have been successful at doing that, it'll be helpful, but there's many more who have not. And, that's a difficult, situation. And, we're certainly going forward. And actually for the past 2 years, we've shifted entirely to multifamily. And, that's just one of the reasons. I see it as a very stable long-term investment that can weather a lot of unpredictable situations. And I think I was a little bit uncertain as to how it would play out, particularly in the Class C apartment mm-hmm. and the mobile homes, because of who specifically the virus affected and the shutdowns affected. And it was largely blue-collar workers. I mean, everybody who's working at fast food places and hospitality sector, working in the hotels, it didn't play out the way, the last recession did in our country, which hit a lot of white collar workers. It really hit hard with sort of the lower to middle income class, sector, disproportionately hard, I think. And so I was wondering how rent collection would go, but it's been pretty solid. And certainly the unemployment benefits have helped. I mean, in that sector, the people who've successfully made unemployment claims, a lot of them are earning more now on unemployment than they were when they were working.
Yes.
Yeah. Here in Hawaii, that is
not gonna make any probably political commentary. Crazy that is, but as a person who's collecting the rent, I'm happy that people are meeting their rent obligations. So.
Yeah. Now, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners who are landlords right now have had that situation. I mean, I've worked with my tenants. A couple of them got laid off. I lowered the rent by 20%, 25%, or set up a plan kind of similar to what you did. Well, hey, let's take a couple of months off here. And, we'll figure something out on the back end of the lease and just work that. You see on the Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff, those like memes that are like rent's due. And it's got like that, like wrestler dude, that Jack guy, like someone's going to knock on your door and, kick your ass if you don't pay rent. But the reality is when stuff does go down like this as a landlord and as a human being, just, the best policy is just treat your tenants like you'd like to be treated, Yeah. Be a human about it and just deal with it, and And ultimately, if your business can't handle, you know, a 20% dip in rents, then you probably bought wrong. You know, you probably didn't buy right on the front end to, you know, to take a little month hit like that. So yeah, that's, it's a great thing that you're doing, that you're working with these folks. And, it's funny that you kind of segued for us right now when we talked about multifamily and it being, recession resistant. I'm not going to say recession proof because nothing is recession proof, but recession resistant. But then you go into mobile home parks, and I really want to dig into that and kind of what was that, what swayed you from, because you have this path, right? It was like retail and office space. You're like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then you're like, oh, multifamily. Yes. And then what was that turning point for you to get into mobile home parks, and why would you advocate any investor even looking in that direction?
So I had a lot of just monumental changes in my investing in the last couple of years. And you know, it really was all triggered by a mastermind that I attended, actually multiple masterminds. So I attended a mastermind, I guess it was about 2 years ago now, where it's the multifamily boardroom, which was organized by Rod Khalif. And you know, I went into a room with about 30 other large multifamily investors and realized that at the time I was the only one who was exclusively funding my own deals, and everyone else in the room was raising capital and investing on behalf of limited partners and passive investors. And that was pretty eye-opening for me. You know, I'd been doing it for a long time and had not taken that path and started to open myself up to that and realize that, hey, syndicating deals and, you know, there were opportunities there for me to grow my business. It was becoming extremely hard to continue the growth of my business, funding it organically. And after that long of struggling and not being able to take any cash out, I just realized that, hey, maybe it's time for me to grow in a different way, make money for other people, not just myself. And I got pretty motivated and started to work with some other investors in partnerships to do syndication projects initially in apartments. I learned so much from that mastermind got so excited about what I was learning. I decided to go to a couple more masterminds, and one of them was in Hawaii, and it had been organized by Brandon Turner. I had met Brandon about 4 or 5 years ago. I'd been a guest on Bigger Pockets a couple of times, and we had stayed in touch. And we reconnected in Hawaii, and I started to talk to him about my plans to grow an apartment partnership. And he was talking about his plans to do basically the exact same thing with mobile home parks. We kind of put our heads together and we're like, we should do this together. And so I joined Open Door Capital as their asset manager. My property management company is doing the property management, and Open Door Capital invests in large mobile home parks across the country. And we have a team of people who take care of all aspects of that. We have somebody who's responsible for investor relations and helping with raising capital. We have a guy who's our director of acquisitions that does all of our underwriting. And you know, we have you know, Brandon is at the helm. We also have Ryan Murdoch, who's Brandon's right-hand person, who's involved in all aspects of the business. Walker Meadows is our underwriter, and Mike Williams is the investor relations person. And it's a great team. On the property management side, my wife actually runs my property management business, and she has spearheaded the property management for the mobile home parks.
Outstanding.
Her name's Trisha, and she's been fantastic. And you know, at this point, it's been a fun ride. We're nearly a year in, and you know, including the parks we recently put under contract, we're going to go over 1,000 pads. And
wow.
You you know, probably nearly double that by the end of the year, hopefully. It's really taken off, and you know, we love the recession resistance of mobile home parks. We love the limited supply. Mm-hmm. We love the demand for affordable housing. All the trends seem to weigh in the favor of mobile home parks. It's the most economical housing option out there. And when times are tough, you know, people need economical places to live. So we feel really good. We have a full-time person, Tristan Thomas, who all he does is infill. So, you know, that's one of the things that mobile home park investors have found challenging in the past, but we have been successful adding value to parks by filling them. And it really helps that we've got a full-time person that all they do is focus on filling the vacant pads in the parks that we buy. So it's off to a great start. You know, the first park that we closed on in Ohio is just tearing it up in terms of we're dramatically beating our projected returns. And, we're just really excited about where things are headed. So we did, our initial fund, we raised, about $5 million. The second fund is a $10 million fund that's actually going to just about to close out. And we've got two parks. We've closed on our first one in Fund Two. We've got two more under contract. It's going really well. So we're focusing primarily on the Midwest and the Southeast. You know, those are areas that we're pretty positive on the growth trends. We like that they're more landlord-friendly states. Mm-hmm. And we are very leery about some states, some of the laws that are getting passed that are, affect your ability to manage your properties. And so we definitely like the more landlord-friendly areas right now. But yeah, that's kind of in a nutshell. That's how I got into it. And that's why I love the mobile home parks. And that's a big focus of my time right now. I'm still investing in apartments, but I spend more of my time on mobile home parks.
Hey guys, Kevin here. And I wanted to take a quick break from the show to fill you in on what's happening behind the scenes at Active Duty Passive Income. Most of you already know that ADPI is not just a podcast. We're a community of real estate and passive income warriors taking action, building wealth, and giving back together. That's why I'm so proud to announce the creation of ADPI's Financial Services Division. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team of pros is ready to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show. Yeah, and I think the one thing that a lot of investors love about mobile home parks is that barrier to entry is that people think mobile home parks are like awful. They're like, oh, trailer trash and all this stuff. And they think of like Reno 911 or something, or like cops, whatever, cops knocking on the door and stuff. But the truth is that they're just people and they're paying rent. And yeah, they might be in a tough spot, but a lot of them own their own manufactured homes, and they take care of it because it's their home. So there's so much that, you know, we could talk about mobile home parks forever. But I just really admire the fact that you made that transition. And then I think a lot of our listeners might not understand, like me personally, I was able to, you know, I put an offer in on a 46 pad mobile home park, ended up getting beat out, whatever. The offer was like $200,000. Guys, you can't get a good house in Washington, D.C. for $200,000, let alone 46 pads. So like when I'm talking about like another level, if you're interested in commercial, but you're worried about, raising a bunch of capital or maybe the high cost of entry in some commercial assets, take a good hard look at mobile home parks. And shameless plug, join the Multifamily Academy where Tim Kelly specializes in mobile home parks. The guy kills it in those. And there's a whole module, like it's like 4 hours of content on mobile home parks.
Yeah. Like, it's great. It's a great place to cut your teeth. And you know, I think that you can, the returns that you can get on the small entry-level mobile home parks are pretty astounding. So if I was just getting started, you know, I would be considering small mobile home parks, you know, something with 10, 20, 30 pads. Not unusual if you look to come across things that are trading at 11 a cap, a 12 cap. I saw one the other day at a 13 cap. You just can't get those deals in other asset classes right now. You know, we're competing more with institutional buyers, like much larger parks, and the cap rates are closer to apartments. You get a little bit higher cap rate, but not too much. But if you're an entry level and you're going to go in, you can get great, great deals on small mobile home parks.
Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, ton of strategies on how to either put new homes on the pads using creative lease options with tenants. And actually, like I said, you're set up a lease option with that tenant, so they become owners of that home. And then you still get to charge them lot rent, which is something that you don't really get to charge, you know, someone living in your quadplex or something like that. Like, there's rent. There's no like lot rent. You know, it doesn't exist. So, yeah.
And that's our preference, is that in the parks that we own, we really don't want to own the homes. We want the residents to own their own homes. When we buy parks where the park them owns the homes, we try to sell those homes and get people on payment plans. Because it's a lot easier to manage if you want to own the dirt, you want to own the infrastructure. And it's more of a challenge if you have to maintain the homes, because, you know, mobile homes are not constructed to, you know, they're not as durable as an apartment. So, you know, if you have somebody renting a home that you own, then it's a lot of maintenance involved. So certainly on investments we make, we want to collect that lot rent, and that's it, right? That's where we want to make our money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. Absolutely love that. So tell us a little bit about your strategies moving forward, right? I mean, so you said that you were able to, this year you're looking at doubling the amount of mobile home parks you have. What are some of the marketing strategies you guys use, or some of the tactics that you guys use to try and maybe increase your deal flow, right? If that's what you're doing, or how are you getting there? What's your approach?
So it's definitely a challenge. We recognize that very early on that's probably our biggest bottleneck to growth right now. We have a lot of reach, especially through my partner Brandon Turner, in terms of like being able to raise capital and find investors. You know, there's been a lot of interest in our funds. Challenge is we need to find enough parks to deploy the capital. So the things that have worked for us so far, we have purchased parks through brokers, but we've had some early luck. We when we realized that we needed more deal flow, we put our heads together and we came up with this plan that we created a website. It's called Bring Brandon a Deal. You know, bring
Brandon. Nice.
Yes. Yes. So,
I'm
looking that up right now.
You know, everybody, if you find a park that's 100 pads or more with public utilities, if we buy it, we'll give you 50 grand. And that's our offer. So we promote that. So a lot of people will go, they go to bringbrandonadeal.com, put the information in. It can't be one that's listed with a broker. It has to be off market, and you have to have contact with the owner. So we don't just have people going in and putting like every park.
Putting just random addresses in. You
know, don't have people pulling them off LoopNet and putting.
Yeah.
once we kind of figured out the process and what the rules needed to be.
Yeah.
You know, we put it out there and we've gotten some deal flow. And actually one of the parks we have under contract right now came through the Bring Brandon a Deal website. And so someone's going to get 50 grand when we close. So
That's awesome. Nice. That is so cool.
That's a bad deal for the people that are just getting started out and they're willing to beat the bushes and you know, knock on some doors if they can find a, you know, $50,000's not a bad
thing. That's wholesaling, people. That's wholesaling. So don't you know, these little wholesale deals that you're doing right now for $2,000 and $3,000. No. Go and find yourself 100 bad mobile home park and then call Brandon Turner. Actually, call me first. Call me first.
But. Yeah, right. Yeah, call us, and then we'll connect you to Brian.
Yeah, we'll get you to Brandon. Don't worry, we'll get
right,
you to
we
Brandon.
Got you. We got you. We're just a little bit off the top, right?
Yeah.
So we got that going on. We've got a couple of wholesalers that are partnering up with us that we've got out there, like, bringing us some deals, and that's, you know, that started to bear some fruit. So, you know, that's basically the three, you know, I would say the lead gen through Bring Brandon a Deal, the wholesalers, and brokers. And then we occasionally get one just from our, you know, the partnership, we have connections.
Just networking.
I still get somebody that brings one to me because they know I'm in mobile home parks and they'll, mm-hmm. But you know, there's not a high volume there. So that's pretty much where all the deals are coming from right now. And, it's a great way to leverage, you know, Brandon Turner has such a reach. And so that's part of what we said, how can we leverage, you know, his popularity and his reach. And that was what we came up with, was he can reach investors to help raise capital, and he can reach people who want to drum up deals, and we'll pay them a referral fee. So it's working so well so far, and you know, we're trying to ramp it up even more.
Yeah, and when me and Mike are as popular as Brandon Turner, we'll be doing the same thing. So it's fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. So if you guys are listening to this, you're going to go to Bring Mike and Kev
a deal,
and we're going to bring that deal to Bring Brandon. It'll be great.
Yes, it's all full circle. So that's what happens when you come on our podcast, man.
Hijack our strategy.
Yeah, that's right.
That's phenomenal strategy. I'm
actually
sorry.
No. I want to talk real briefly, because we're running out of time. I want to talk about these funds. Now, are these blind multi-asset funds that you're raising and then deploying your capital as you see fit? So let's tell our audience what that means real quick. And then a quick follow-up question to that is, if you don't, you know, say you're taking this person's capital, someone invests $500,000 into one of your funds. Mm-hmm. What are you, are you giving them some sort of preferred return while that capital is waiting to be deployed in your next deal? Like if you have a bottleneck on deal flow?
Yeah. So basically, the first half of your question, like we raising the capital and deploying those funds. So we don't, it's different from a specific project, like an apartment syndication, where you've got, hey, this is the specific property, mm-hmm. we have it under contract, this is exactly how much we need to close this one property. What we want to do is diversify the investment across multiple properties. So we're hoping that, hey, the investors put their money in, we'll get properties that are across different states, maybe, you know, in different cities, different states, maybe a little bit different profile. Some risk mitigation there by spreading the capital across multiple parks. Now, obviously we don't have, you know, five parks under contract at once that are all lined up and do that. So what we do is we figure out how much we're going to deploy. We start raising that capital, goes into our fund account, and then we deploy those funds as the parks close. Mm-hmm. So, to date, we haven't had to sit on capital for very long. I think the first fund, we deployed fairly quickly. And the second fund, we've already closed on one park. We've got two more under contract. So mm-hmm. talking about maybe at most a few months, but those investors who get in early are already earning returns on the parks that already closed. So okay. They're gaining that the preferred payments and the benefits of getting in early, because they're already generating returns on that capital. The people who come in later, they jump in whenever, you know, wherever we are in the process. So to this point, it hasn't been an issue. We're paying 8% preferred returns to our investors. You know, we're projecting the 15% IRR, which is pretty typical right now, similar to what apartment syndications are paying. I think the bigger bonus for people who are investing in the mobile home parks is we tend to generate some pretty healthy cash flow right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing the way value add apartment deals, a lot of them will have that 15% IRR, but the cash flow is really, really low for the first maybe 3 or 4 years. Sometimes there'll be a reposition and a refi maybe in year 3, and then you get a big chunk of money back. But we're able to provide kind of stronger cash flow, I guess, in the early years. It's probably the biggest advantage that it offers. But yeah, that's how we handle that. And that's how it's structured.
That's very cool. I kind of nerd out about that stuff, and I'm learning about blind funds and the way to do things, for my business. But, it's really, really interesting that, you know, in a lot of real estate, you follow syndicators and you think about what you just said, you have to raise money for that deal and for that PPM. And I'm getting into a lot of multifamily stuff that I probably shouldn't be on this podcast, but it's just interesting that there's another way, there's another path to do essentially the same thing. From an investor standpoint, you're still paying the investors a preferred return. They're still getting stake and equity in the deal. It's just a different way to do it. So I think the big lesson here is, for any investor listening right now, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, guys. There's a lot of ways to skin the cat. And if one model isn't necessarily working for you, do what Mike said earlier in the show and just change something and narrow it down. But it's been really cool, Brian.
Yeah, man, this has been really, really rewarding. I really appreciate your time, Brian. We're running out of time, so we'll take you into the bonus round. We've got 4 final questions for you. The first one, what is your favorite book or business tool that you use?
I'm a huge reader. I read a ton of books. My favorite book changes all the time, depending on which one's kind of top of mind that I'm really excited about. I've been spending a lot of time. I actually have a copy here on this book. It's called, Poor Charlie's Almanac.
Have
you ever seen that?
No.
Wow.
It's called the Wit and Wisdom of Charles T. Munger. For the listeners who don't know who Charlie Munger is, he's Warren Buffett's partner. This book is all about his partner, Charlie Munger, who it's just chock full of amazing investing advice. And it's what's great is as I read through it, there's so much of it that even though a lot of it wasn't intended for real estate investing, it so much applies. Mm-hmm. So Charlie Munger, the guy's brilliant. And, I used to read a lot of his quotes and think, wow, like that guy's really great. I've got quotes from him in my book as well. And, so this is a hard book to find, but it's been a great read. So I'm going to go with that for my answer.
That's awesome. That's like the everyone knows Warren Buffett, but they're like, oh, I wonder who Warren Buffett is partnered with. Oh yeah, Charlie Munger. Like that name, like just doesn't roll off.
I didn't pick a book that I could pretty much guarantee no one else on your that appears in.
That is a fact, sir.
And it's definitely a fact. And that's a big if we can find it on Amazon, we will definitely put a link on that in the show notes page for you guys to go ahead and grab it.
Yeah. Or Brian will sell you his.
It's mine. It might be out of print. So it's expensive and hard to find, but it's well worth it. So
excellent. Excellent. All right. Question number 2, who is your biggest hero and why?
Yeah. So this is a really tough one. I mean, to be completely honest, I don't really have a hero. I tend to think super highly of just your everyday average people who are working hard, and like I see heroes every day. One person that came to mind was my first ever employee. His name was John Einbeck, and he was actually a superintendent for me, And I've never met anybody who took more pride in his work and worked harder than he did. And, you know, super nice person. He was very giving and helped everyone that he could. After he had worked for me for about 7 or 8 years, he got cancer and passed away. But I thought of him when I heard the question. But you know, I don't have like that, I guess, you know, big huge figure I thought of him when I heard the question. So
that's still a touching story. That's awesome. That is amazing. You know, and it's hard to find good people out there that are that passionate.
Yeah, I think the longer I'm in this, the more I realize how really truly fortunate I was to have him as a first employee, because it's so hard to find good people. And those early years of growing my company, you know, those were some really hard times, and there were a lot of setbacks and a lot of failures along the way, and having the right person there to get you through was worth a lot. So
definitely.
All right, next question. What do you like to do for fun outside of business?
Well, I still think real estate's fun.
There you go. That's cool. Nothing wrong with it.
No, I want to hear like skydiving, doing like some Mission Impossible stuff.
I write a lot. I have a book of my own that I put out. I'm working on another book right now. And I'm also a big runner. I enjoy, I've competed in a lot of marathons, and I like to hike and walk and run and get outside and enjoy nature. And, you know, I like trail running, anything to get outside and get some fresh air.
Excellent. Cool. Let's plug that book, Brian. I didn't even know you've written a book. What's it called? Where can people find it?
The book I wrote is called Crushing It in Apartments and Commercial Real Estate. And you can find that on Amazon.
We will post a link. We will find it on Amazon. I don't know if we're going to find Charlie Munger's book, but we will find your book. There will be a link in our show notes, people. So click the link, get the book. Yep. Thank you for that. All right, last question, Brian. If you had 3 nuggets that you could give someone who's just getting started out in real estate investing, maybe they're kind of information overload, or they don't really know where they want to go, what would those 3 nuggets be?
I think... the very first thing I would tell people is to think big. I think people don't understand what they are capable of doing. I think that it's very natural for people just getting interested in real estate to be thinking small, thinking conservative. And I would really encourage you to think big and just kind of maybe go outside of your comfort zone. The second is one we already talked about. It's to take action. It's to take that first step and keep going, right? The hardest step is the first step. But if you take a step every day for a year, you'll be amazed at how far you can go. And so, you know, take action. Don't just read books. Don't just listen to podcasts. Those are awesome to give you the information you need, but eventually you have to actually take action. And then the last thing would be, I'm a huge proponent, at least, you know, certainly early on in an investing career, to do the hard work. And so, you know, one of the ways you can improve your chances of being successful is to work harder than other people. And so you don't have to have any special skills to do that. You don't have to have these like gifts. You don't have to be rich. If you're willing to work hard, that'll set you apart and it'll dramatically improve your chances of success. So those would be three tips I would give.
Love that. Those are amazing. And a lot of people don't know what they're capable of. I certainly didn't. Now I'm just starting to like figure out, be like, oh, maybe I can like be pretty good at this. This is fun. I like this.
Yeah. Every step of the way along my journey, I was doubting, and I was like, I don't, you know, could I do this? Could I go?
But that's natural. That's natural.
Then when you actually do it, you look back and you realize, you can't really, once you actually do it, you realize you didn't really have to think that way. You were trapped by your own mindset, and you realize that, hey, right from the beginning, people need to try to get that proper mindset and understand that, hey, there's so much you can do. So,
yeah.
That's true.
And you talked about it earlier, and I want to just double, triple tap it, but you, I think you had said it, you kind of unlocked your mind when you joined that mastermind, that when you went to that first mastermind, you know, at Rod Cleave's boardroom, and you realized all of these other rock stars around you, and it kind of changed things for you. And for all the folks listening right now, join a mastermind. And if it's not a real estate mastermind, join a mastermind of something that you like doing and be surrounded by people who are really, really good at it, and you will get better at it. I promise you that. If your goal is to get better at something, surround yourself with the people who are crushing it in the industry. If you do want to do real estate and you want to do 1 to 4 units in single family real estate, we have the mastermind for you. Action Takers Only Mastermind, join Adam. If you want to do multifamily and the stuff that, you know, Brian focused on and he's talked about in this interview, we have one of those too, you know, the Multifamily Academy. And it's just a place to surround yourself with people who are doing what you want to do. And I don't know, there's just so much value in there, Mike, that it's like, I wish I knew it when, you know, years ago, because I would have jumped on it. And we have those opportunities. And I just want everyone listening to take advantage of it, because they're phenomenal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, Brian, again, thank you so much for the value that you brought in this show, man. This has been great. How can our listeners connect with you, hear more about, you know, what you and maybe Brandon are doing, and of course, you know, get to your book?
Yeah, you can follow me on social media. You know, I try to post periodically when there's stuff going on and post advice for people. So you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @CrushingItBrian. And then I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. So, and of course, yeah, that's my book, Crushing It in Apartments and Commercial Real Estate. You can find that on Amazon. So guys, had a great time talking with you.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks, Brad.
Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.